answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
A U.S. official says the one-way drone used in the attack was Iranian-made, the same kind Iran has provided to Russia to aid in its invasion of Ukraine and to the militias it supports.
Iran continues to arm and equip these groups to launch these attacks.
Pentagon officials tell CBS News the explosive drone came in low and slow several minutes after a U.S. drone was returning from a mission in Syria. The base's air defense system had been temporarily taken offline to allow the American drone to land safely. There was little to no warning for the troops still in their sleeping quarters.
That is a shocking report as filed by CBS, and the information inside of it that the warning system that would have detected the drone coming in low and slow headed to our troops at Tower 22, that outpost, the radar was turned off. They turned it off, apparently, to make sure that they did not try to shoot down their own drone as it returned. Now, I do not know specifics of exactly how and what they're doing out there, but there is a way to identify craft that is not enemy, it is yours. I do not know what the hell they were doing otherwise in this case. I'm not going to claim I have any expertise on it, but their identification ways that are constantly in place. They identify all the planes flying in the sky at any point. They have to have a signal that they transmit to be identified, who they are, where they're going, that kind of stuff, if they have a flight plan. If they don't have a flight plan, they may or may not have a signal they're emitting. But in this case, if you're in area where you're possibly facing a threat, an attack upon your troops from a foreign national, and you're in a hostile territory anyway. I mean, they're in Jordan, that's one of our more peaceful neighbors in the Middle East, but surrounded by the hostiles. Turning off your protection to allow one of your own drones to return, I have to admit, I'm totally lost on this one. I'll try to get more answers for you as we move through this program, but there's a lot of questions about that. Now, President Biden did come out and make some additional remarks today about what he's going to do. There was another press gathering, mobbing, as he's waiting for the Chopper One to take him somewhere, wherever he is going at that point. And there's a lot of noise and the cameras flashing. Bottom line is, again, nothing of substance said other than, you know, we'll be responding. And I'm not looking for the president or anyone in our military to be telling the enemy and telegraphing what our plan is. I've got an interesting story I'll relate to that a little bit later as to, it goes back to the original Iraqi war, the original Gulf War, I should say it. But let me save it for a little bit later because I want to deal with some more pressing things. First of all, let me set the stage for you. Glad to have you on board again with us, January 30, 2024. January 30, wow. This year is almost a 12th gone. This is the first hour of Larry Connors USA, first to 2 hours back-to-back, right here for you, Monday through Friday, from 6 to 8 p.m. And remember, if you miss anything, you can also go to LarryConnorsUSA.com or Larry Connors USA Facebook and pull it up. When we're on the air, we are streaming video at Larry Connors USA Facebook, Twitter, Rumble, also News Talk STL, Facebook, Rumble, Twitter, and on YouTube for News Talk STL. And more of you are watching at your appointed times at work for you, that's fine. When you do, please share with others that you think need to be included. Thank you. Now, the official response, as I said, President Biden would be the official response, but he didn't really add much, and neither did his official spokesman. But let's go down the list. We'll begin with Secretary of State Blinken, followed by John Kirby of the NSC coordinating for the White House?
We will respond. And that response could be multi-leveled, come in stages, and be sustained over time.
President Biden huddled with top advisors Monday while it's still unclear whether the U.S. will directly target Iran.
We are not looking for a war with Iran. We are not seeking a conflict with the regime in a military way.
On Capitol Hill, some Republicans say the militias responsible should be hit with force.
These are the tentacles of Iran, and we need to hit the tentacles hard to send a message to Iran that the United States will not tolerate attacks on our troops.
While some Democrats are urging caution.
We are increasingly getting pulled into a wider and wider war in the Middle East, and I think we have to be extremely careful about what our next steps are.
It is obviously true that we need to be extremely careful, and we do not want to widen the war, but you cannot let them stew in that, our fear, because they will then boil over again. And the more this White House says, we don't want to enrage and enlarge the war, are they talking to the enemy? Are they talking to the American people? The American people do not want a wild conflict in the Middle East. That we, I think, should all agree on. We don't want mini nukes or anything else like that used, even short of that, in the Middle East. God grant us peace throughout the world, but that's not going to happen at this point. But the enemy, every time you say, well, we don't want to engage in more, we don't want a wider range, to me, you're almost saying, okay, we took that on the chin, and we lost 3 service members, woe is us, but we don't want to make it a bigger fight. I take direct and immediate condemnation of such an attitude. And also agree with what has been stated, that when we do respond, don't talk to me about proportional. You make it heavy. You make it heavy-handed. Boot stomping on the back of their neck is necessary to whatever the targets you go after. And you do not telegraph in advance, we're going to do it so they can clear their personnel and weapons out of the area, as we did before we hit some of the targets in Yemen. Yeah, we let the Houthi rebels know we're going to be hitting this target. Well, it gives them time to clear everything out, including their weapons and people. Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, and his view.
There has to be devastating military retaliation for the targeting of American troops in Jordan, a friendly nation across international borders, leaving 3 dead Americans and more than 36 wounded. And some of those, Bill, are in grave, critical condition as well. This is not an anomaly for Iran. This is what they've been doing for 45 years, but they have amped it up under Joe Biden and before him Barack Obama, because the Obama-Biden foreign policy has been one of appeasement and conciliation. We have to totally reverse that policy, starting with retaliatory strikes right now and continuing beyond that to ensure that we're no longer trying to bribe the Ayatollahs with billions of dollars. We're not looking the other way whenever they cheat on sanctions, and we're certainly not going to tolerate even the slightest provocation against our troops in the Middle East. Anything else will simply invite more attacks.
That is correct. If you're just going to kind of slap at them or do nothing or give them advance warning, they're going to respond with more attacks and more force. I want you to listen to an ABC host questioning Senator Cotton and actually quoting a critic about the possibility and the luxury, let me put it that way, the luxury of being a U.S. senator and to make a statement like he did without any connections to any consequences. Here's the ABC reporter raising the question to Senator Cotton.
Calling for irresponsible actions without bearing responsibility for the outcome is a senatorial perk. What would you say is actually irresponsible in this situation?
What's irresponsible is 11 years of the Obama-Biden foreign policy towards Iran, of trying to appease, coddle, and conciliate Ayatollahs who still chant to this day, death to America and death to Israel. That's why we have all these attacks on Americans. Bill, you laid out the more than 160 attacks since Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th, but it didn't start because of that October 7th atrocity. There were more than 100 attacks against Americans since Joe Biden took office before October 7th. How many times did we retaliate? Something like 4 or 5. Almost every case against empty buildings or warehouses in the middle of nowhere. Again, that simply emboldened Iran and its proxies throughout the Middle East to continue these attacks. That's the height of irresponsibility, a cowardly, sniveling policy that led our troops as sitting ducks in a region because the commander-in-chief would not take action to protect them.
Thank you, Senator Cotton, for putting it that boldly. And thank you to the men and women that are serving in our services, wherever you are. Maybe you're not in the Middle East at this point, but you might well be before it's over. And thanks to the parents and relatives you have. Our troops are at the tip of the spear at this point, yet we're not really ready, apparently, to use it. Now, here's the other issue. One thing Biden could do immediately, and I don't know why they continue to dally around and play whatever game they're doing in the back room of crayons, immediately reimpose sanctions against Iran. Start there. And we won't even do that. The Biden administration, of course, also continues to fight Texas for protecting its own border from illegals invading that state. And later in this hour, Heritage constitutional expert Hans von Spakovsky will join us on that legal battle. Plus, the Texas governor is now going after any city or county in Texas that wants to declare itself a sanctuary.
The first and foremost goal of government is to keep our people safe. What this sheriff has done is to release back out on the streets people who endanger our fellow Texans. As governor, I will not allow that to happen. Stuart, already I have defunded the Travis County government to the tune of $1.5 million in grant money from the governor's office. But now Texas is working on legislation that has already passed out of the Senate, I think will pass out of the House, and in just a few weeks I will sign legislation that will impose stiff penalties on counties as well as on county officials like this sheriff, including the potential for jail time, including fines, including the possibility that these counties can be sued for civil damages for their dereliction of duty.
Yeah, suing them. That's pretty strong. Now, of course, there's going to be a battle back and forth. But Austin, Texas, my birthplace, which I regret to say has gone blue, is one of those stepping up and acting like a sanctuary city. Governor Abbott is convinced that the penalties we're going to impose upon the cities and the counties by withholding funds is going to be punishing, and it will work.
The financial penalties will be so stiff, there's no way the counties could bear the burden of that cost. But secondly, because of the potential for jail time for the sheriff, ironically, going to the very jail that she is releasing people from, because of that, we will have the removal of the sheriff who is in noncompliance with ICE detainer requests.
And when will all of these measures be in place?
This should be a few weeks from now. Our legislative session ends at the end of May. I should be signing that law before the end of May. The effective date of this will be September 1. That's just the way the legislative calendar works. But this law will go into effect September 1 that will banish sanctuary cities. However, Stuart, in the meantime, I as governor and law enforcement officers in the state of Texas will be doing everything we can to make sure these dangerous criminals are not released back out onto the streets.
And that is important because that's what they're doing in sanctuary cities and states, not just in Texas, but elsewhere, where they pick them up. They will not hold them for detention until ICE can get there. They just simply let them go. And he says you're not going to do that in this state again without facing severe penalties from the state. And, of course, today we now are moving forward at this point with the House to impeach Alejandro Mayorkas.
House Republicans unveil articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. GOP leaders saying, quote, his refusal to obey the law is not only an offense against the separation of powers in the Constitution of the U.S., it also threatens our national security. Texas Congressman Pat Fallon filed the original articles of impeachment against Mayorkas a year ago and joins us now as the GOP closes in on making it happen. So, Congressman, for people who say he just is terrible at his job, but it's not impeachable, what do you say?
Well, I say that when you lie under oath to Congress, Brian, that that is impeachable. And that's what Alejandro Mayorkas has done. And not only that, but he's violated the Immigration and Nationality Act seven, eight times over. And these articles spell that out in specificity.
Yeah, now that raises a different issue than what we were discussing yesterday when Jonathan Turley, also a Fox News contributor, a George Washington Law School professor, said, you can't really impeach Mayorkas simply because he does a bad job. But the articles of impeachment laying out instances of perjury and where he has said things that obviously are untrue, then you've got an issue possibly for high crimes and misdemeanors, at least as we go through the House. The problem is it's still a razor-thin margin. As you were listening then to the response to the Republican who had introduced the measure and finally getting around to it, trying to get the House to get on board with it, Texas Congressman Pat Fallon, he said, we're not getting at this point everything we need in support from our own party. Some of them are a little weak-kneed again. I will be discussing if Mayorkas can be impeached coming up in the next segment with our Heritage constitutional expert. And before this hour is out, MSNBC Rachel Madden Woman Maddow warns of Trump dictatorship. But before I do that, one other thing I want to add. The squad member Cori Bush is now under the DOJ investigation. That's right. The member of the far-left squad in Congress reportedly under investigation for allegedly misusing government funds meant for private security. Six different sources are being cited from the DOJ. Yesterday, the Justice Department subpoenaed the House Sergeant at Arms for records related to the misuse of federal security money. The House clerk read a message from the Office of the Sergeant of Arms formally notifying the House chamber that the office had been served with a grand jury. And according to the official House website, the Sergeant at Arms is the chief law enforcement and protocol officer of the House of Representatives, responsible for maintaining order, blah, 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 blah. And it continues along that way. Now, the reports did not name which House Democrat was involved in the investigation officially. But one House Democrat previously investigated had been Cori Bush. She continues to pay now her husband for private security after their marriage. And then don't forget about Fannie Willis down in Georgia. Fannie, Bonnie, Funny. She's also facing criminal investigation. Coming up, Hans von Spakovsky on Can We Impeach Mayorkas and What Do We Do About the Texas Border Barrier Battle? A lot to cover. You don't want to go anywhere. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Pigeons, they are everywhere, and they're very good at dive-bombing freshly washed cars. Wellington Environmental reminds you, those droppings are more than a nuisance. They can be a major health issue, especially massive droppings on buildings or in parking garages. So who do you call to safely clean it up? You do what many hospitals, universities, public buildings already do. You call Wellington Environmental. Wellington Environmental has been dealing with all kinds of hazards for 35 years. Special people, special skills, special equipment. Wellington gets it done. So to avoid health issues ranging from pigeon droppings to mold to chemical leaks, contact Wellington, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. WellingtonSTL.com. Wellington Environmental, your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps in the afternoon.
Horace, Americans individually have lost over $4,000 in income and over $7,000 where you have a household with both parents working.
It shouldn't be, it's the economy, stupid. We should just say, stupid! It's the economy. Unbelievable the devastation that Americans are feeling.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps, weekdays at 3:30
on News Talk STL.
What if everything you thought and believed to be true about owning and buying your home turned out to be wrong?
Straightforward, objective advice on the right way to make the most out of every dollar you put into your home.
We're the only country that has one of those. Most other countries, considering like Canada, the UK, they don't have long-term fixed-rate mortgages like that. They're all variable-rate mortgages.
HomeWise with Michael Midget, Sunday mornings at 9 on News Talk STL.
Great news for my sponsor, Napoli C. And it's no surprise to me, nor hundreds who have dined there. The first time I entered, it was clear Napoli C is unique. The decor, the fish, imaginative cocktails. And, of course, Napoli C is right next door to Napoli 3 in St. Charles. Napoli 2 is in Town and Country. The original Cafe Napoli is in Clayton. And I'm honored to endorse each of them. Visit any of the Cafe Napolis.
This is News Talk STL.
Cisco Kid was a friend of mine. Cisco Kid was a friend of mine. He drank whiskey, poncho, drink the wine.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. My guest is Hans von Spakovsky. He's a heritage constitutional expert. And Hans, always glad to have you on board, sir.
Well, thanks for having me back.
I know you're on a tight schedule. I don't want to abuse it, so let's jump right to it. First of all, let's deal with the border battle. I'm looking at some statements from the Heritage Foundation and maybe you as well. I don't know who actually signed off on it, that the decision by the Supreme Court is not preventing the state of Texas from protecting its border. Am I wrong or right?
No, you're correct about that. As you know, what Texas has been doing is putting down barbed wire fencing, but they've been sticking to state-owned property and private property, where the owners have given them permission to do that. And no court has told Texas that it has to take that down. The only thing that happened was that an injunction had been issued telling the Biden administration that it couldn't take down any parts of this fencing, and the Supreme Court issued a two-line order saying, no, the injunction is dissolved while this case is on appeal. So it wasn't a decision on the merits.
You know, that now that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because I've been saying that the other day, that a lot of ranch land abuts to other ranch land. I don't know how much of it abuts directly, and I don't know, well, first of all, do you know if the Rio Grande border and the actual, let's say an eminent domain exists between it and any private owned land or even state land?
I think there's a lot of private land along the border, and you know, the smartest thing.
I know it's
along
the border, but does it include access to the river? I mean, that they have the Rio Grande part of it.
Yeah, no, I think so, and that's why it's really smart for Texas to be doing what it is doing.
That was my thought. I thought if there is an eminent domain stretch there that neither belongs to the state nor the landowners, then you just pull the barbed wire back, razor wire, and put it on the farmers and ranchers' land. They already have fences up anyway. I mean, they keep out coyotes, and by that I mean the four-legged type, but this will also keep out the coyotes who bring over the illegals.
Right. No, that's exactly right. So at the moment, like I said, Texas, there's no court order preventing Texas from doing what it's doing. And as you have seen within the last couple of days, the Biden administration actually backed down and said it was no longer going to try to take down any of the barbed wire fencing.
I did see that, but it, to me, it signals that they're going to try a runaround. Your thought?
Well, they may, although I think that they have been shocked at how popular opinion is very much against them. And I think, you know, we've entered an election year, and given how badly the president is doing in the polls, I think maybe they've decided to back off, I said, on this confrontation with Governor Abbott.
So how can Texas continue to do whatever it wants to then? I mean, they already are calling in their National Guard if they want it. Other governors are offering their National Guard. In other words, the essence of the issue, if the federal government is not going to protect you and your state from a foreign invasion, then you should be entitled to do so. Is that up in the air at all?
Well, that is the position Texas is taking. And remember, what the Supreme Court said was, well, there's no injunction while this case is on appeal, and that's where the situation is. This case right now, the dispute between Texas and the feds, is on appeal. The Fifth Circuit, which is the Court of Appeals that covers Texas, is going to have oral arguments on these issues in mid-February. So we should hear more then.
But at this point, you're saying their effort to do this is, quote, unconstitutional, and Texas will win by a KO.
No, I can't say that. All I can say is that right now, no court has said that what Texas is doing is somehow illegal or improper. So for the moment, they can keep fencing the border and trying to help stem the tide of illegal aliens coming across.
The other point being raised by the Biden administration, you're interfering with the federal government authority on immigration.
Well, they can try to make that argument, but that's a tough argument for them to make, because, in fact, the district court that originally heard this case said that there was an utter failure by the federal government to basically enforce immigration law and halt the unlawful entry into the U.S. So the only people that are hindering enforcement of federal immigration law is the Biden administration. It's certainly not the state of Texas.
All right. Well, in our closing couple of minutes, because, again, I know you're on a tight schedule, and I thank you for making time for us. The House moving forward with the impeachment. Now, yesterday we heard Jonathan Turley, George Washington law professor, as you well know, state that you really can't impeach Mayorkas simply because he does a bad job or you don't like him. I tend to agree with that, and certainly as much as I want Mayorkas out of there, your take on that and this issue of if they can get him on perjury issue would be the next offer.
Well, I normally have a lot of respect for Jonathan Turley, but on this issue, he's wrong. They're not impeaching him for making bad decisions. The impeachment articles are for his deliberate violation of federal immigration law. That's an entirely different matter. And if you look at the articles of impeachment, there's two of them. They go through and they very specifically list he's not just not complying with the law, he is directing the Department of Homeland Security to directly violate federal law. I mean, one of the easiest examples is when an illegal alien comes into the country, federal law says he has to be detained or removed immediately. And instead, the administration is allowing them to come in, helping them come in, and then granting them mass parole. That is a direct violation of federal immigration law. And that's why they want to impeach him, is for that.
Well, to his credit, Turley might have been having to make that statement, not actually seeing the true articles that have now been filed. But aside from that, Biden is still doing his boss's orders.
Well, yeah, and look, there's been some discussion about, well, if you're gonna impeach Mayorkas, then Biden also deserves impeachment because he's the one that's
on immigration. On immigration.
On immigration. Right. On immigration. But I think you start with the federal official who is in charge of the Department of Homeland Security and therefore has immediate control over border security. And by the way, the second article is what you were just talking about, which is lying to Congress under oath on multiple occasions in hearings. That is also clearly an impeachable offense.
Well, is some of that subjective when he says the border's uncontrolled? Our numbers are, you know, not that bad. I mean, are we talking about my perspective is, oh, this is sunny and fun. You're thinking stormy weather.
Well, yeah. When he says it's secure, that's obviously misleading Congress and the public, because in the last 3 years, we've had more illegal aliens cross the border than we have ever had in our entire history. And that is because of deliberate and intentional actions by the administration.
Mayorkas has even admitted that part of the issue is the pull factor. Well, the pull factor exists because they know if they get here, they'll be allowed to get in and they'll actively give them waivers to go on in and then set up an appeal 8-10 years down the road.
That's even if they process them.
Right, even if
and,
they do.
And there's evidence that, in fact, they're just letting people in and letting them go without even doing that.
All right, Hans, I know you're up against the wall there, and I thank you again for your time. Your expertise is always valued. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
We'll do it again. Hans von Spakovsky, Heritage Constitutional Law Expert. Not trying to pit him against Jonathan Turley. It's possible Turley is making his remarks, which would be true. You can't just impeach him because he's bad. He's bad at his job. But if it's violating federal law, then, yeah, it is an impeachable offense. And I don't know how much Turley had seen at that point of the actual impeachment articles. And talking about how some of them are coming through and some of the folks that are being allowed inside, as we were discussing previously with the decision in Texas, we're getting so many in right now that are being absolutely unvetted. We know nothing about them. There's another report of the vast, vast amount of military age young men coming through and from different countries. Does not look good. We'll continue to follow that. Now, a couple other developments for you. The Illinois Election Board announcing that it is going to keep Donald Trump on the state's primary ballot. Oh, that's pissed off a lot of people in Illinois, I guarantee you that. The confirmation coming a week before the U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments on whether Trump's alleged role in the January 6th attack disqualifies him from the presidency. The Illinois primary ballot is March 19, so they've been trying to keep him off raising these federal constitutional questions, as they've been doing in other states. But according to the Associated Press, the 8-member board unanimous ruling comes after its hearing officer, a retired judge and Republican, found a, quote, preponderance of evidence shows Trump is ineligible to run for president because he violated a constitutional ban. But the hearing officer recommended the board let the courts make the ultimate decision. So it may still be in play, but I don't know if they're going to get it resolved by March 19. Now, the other issue coming up with this next election is still the question of who will be second on the ticket. Trump is yet to announce, but then, of course, we have to look at the Biden side of the ballot. And second on the ticket. There is growing concern and also anticipation, excitement, maybe even fear as to who will be vice president and why this election, the vice president position might be more important than ever. That's still to come.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I got an email which brought a smile. A woman named Mary wrote me, "We are purchasing a new roof from John Beale based on your recommendation." I thanked her then. I do it again now. Mary, I only endorse clients I believe in, and I've been a spokesman for John Beale for 10 years. It's all about trust. So if, like Mary, you need John Beale, trust me. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
I like supporting local companies that give back to the community. For more than 40 years, Vincent's Jewelers has helped raise more than $1.5 million for local charities. So I'm personally asking that when you're shopping for jewelry, give Vincent's a chance. And in turn, Vincent's will give even more to our community. On Olive, just east of 270, new specials every day on vincentsjewelers.com or Vincent's Facebook.
News, analysis, opinion.
USA, USA! That's a big game, man!
She's really losing control.
People in China didn't ask me about people mowing each other down in a mall.
This is News Talk STL.
It is their responsibility.
Hate is a metastasizing agent.
We're all keeping a close eye on this.
Legal immigration is crazy right now.
This United States is not being overrun.
News Talk STL.
It is a crisis at the border without question.
At NewsTalkSTL.com.
Planning a move? I encourage you to call McGuire Moving. And they not only do moving, they can provide you portable storage. They'll bring a storage container to you. You fill it at your time and convenience. They'll pick it up, move it where you want it. Here's their phone number, 314-241-0600. 241-0600. Website, McGuireMoving.com. McGuireMoving.com, locally owned.
This is News Talk STL.
I guess I grew up on an older road, a pedal to the metal, always did what I told. Till I found out that my brand new clothes came secondhand from the rich kids next door. And I grew up fast, I guess I grew up mean. There's a thousand things inside my head I wish I ain't seen. And now I just wander through a real bad dream, or feeling like I'm coming apart at the seams. But thank you, Jack Daniel's, low number seven, Tennessee whiskey got me drinking in heaven. And I,
this is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Joe Concha says, and I'm quoting now, the vice presidential picks matter more than ever before in this year's election. Concha is with me now. Joe, why is the VP pick so important this year?
Well, this year, Stu, we have a situation where the consequential pick for Donald Trump is the fact that in 4 years, people see that person being the president, right? If Donald Trump wins and is successful, usually it's then, well, maybe we'll get that vice president in 8 years. So in this case, this is the person that will take the mantle from Donald Trump in an election year that will start basically in 2026. On the Democratic side, it's consequential in a different way, because you have a situation where 32% of Americans, this is according to a Washington Post poll, believe that Kamala Harris is ready to be president. I mean, that's a devastating number when considering most Americans, including a majority of Democrats, don't want Joe Biden running for a second term and being in the Oval Office until he's 86 years old. And perhaps, Stu, this is the reason why we keep hearing this theory that Michelle Obama will replace Joe Biden on the ticket at the convention in Chicago. I don't see that happening, but the chatter is only getting louder around that. So vice presidential picks usually don't decide elections, but they're going to have more of an impact this time around than most other elections.
Those are the words of Fox News correspondent, also contributor to The Messenger, Joe Concha. And again, the point being, if Kamala's on the ticket with Biden, she's not really that liked at all. And if Biden gets in, she will then, if she's serving as VP under him, then she will automatically become president. They don't like that idea. And then on the Republican side, Trump can only serve 4 years. And then he's going to term out since he served the previous 4 years. So it's very important as to who he selects, that that person will be more than likely the Republican leader for the nomination next time around. We'll get into that in more detail in the next hour, including how ABC's Jonathan Carl was giving cover to Gavin Newsom of California regarding anything to do with Trump, his association, and what Biden is doing for the country, are not doing. And I mean, he gives him cover, big time cover. We'll break that down for you in the next hour. I'd mentioned previously about every time we hear our official state, well, we're going to take action against Iran. We're going to go after those who killed our soldiers. We're going to do something, but we don't want to make it too big of a war and make it bigger. And again, I asked, is that message intended for the American people, or is it intended for the enemy? Well, the enemy is going to suck it up anyway. In fact, I'm looking at a report from CNBC, and their NBC News military analyst, Colonel Jacobs, retired, said, Iran is probably going to continue to encourage its allies to attack in the way they are because they see we are reluctant to hit Iran directly. Just that perception lights the fuse for Iran to continue. I'm sure they didn't like hearing that on one of their own state-controlled media outlets, but the colonel's speaking on a military strategy level. If you keep saying, well, we don't want to get things out of control. In other words, we'll stay on the track we're on. Go ahead and hit us again. I had mentioned also previously that during the first Gulf War, the absurdity that would come out sometimes, you remember every afternoon when that first Gulf War was underway, they would have a news conference out of Riyadh. I was on TV at that time, but every afternoon before I went into work, I'd stay at the house long enough to watch that news conference. Normally happened around 1 Central. And they were always asking, what are we going to do next? What are we going to do? Sir, are we going to do this? Are we going to do that? And they said, we're not going to give you details. We'll just say we are taking action. And they were taking action. And so any other questions? Because we're not going to get into that. Well, sir, are we maybe going to strike at night, midnight tonight? We're not going to give details of anything. Next question. Sir, are we maybe going to fly out at 3 a.m. and strike? You idiot reporters, they're not going to give it to you, nor should they. And they just kept hounding and pushing on an issue which, one, is vital to national security and our forces in the region. God help us, the lack of journalism that existed then has just gotten worse. Now, I want to turn my attention to how the leftist state-controlled media, as I call them, MSNBC in this case, uses just bits and phrases, often out of context, no surprise there, to promote that if Trump is elected, he will be a dictator.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want to give someone something which they will really enjoy? Give them a Cafe Napoli gift card. You pick the amount, and they pick which of the Cafe Napolis they want to visit. Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Cafe Napoli in Town and Country, Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles, or right next door, Napoli C. The Napoli gift card. It's the perfect gift for anyone or your entire office. Cafe Napoli. Cafe Napoli.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You are promising America tonight you would never abuse power as retribution against anybody.
Except for day one.
Yeah. Except
look,
what?
He's going crazy. Except for day one.
Meaning?
I said I want to be a dictator for one day. Sean? I only want to be a dictator for one day.
Would you rather have 4 years of Donald Trump as a dictator or 4 years of Joe Biden as a president?
Trump.
As a dictator?
Maybe.
Sometimes in life we all need a good paddling from the principal to set our life on the right track. And this country does need a little bit of that. We need a little paddling.
It's nice to have a strong man running your country.
Would you rather have 4 years of Donald Trump as a dictator or 4 years of Joe Biden as a president?
Donald Trump all the way.
Even as a dictator?
Yes, yes.
Trump. As a dictator.
I think I'm choosing Donald Trump as a dictator.
Yeah, I'm going dictator Trump for sure.
I'd rather have Donald Trump as a dictator.
The other day, Donald Trump said on his first day he's going to be a dictator for a day.
I like that. Yeah, I like that.
Would you rather have Donald Trump as a dictator for 4 years or reelect Joe Biden for 4 years?
I would rather have Donald Trump. I'd like them to see the repeal of the Roosevelt law so that he can be a president for a lot more than 4 years. but we, this country, needs a dictator. I hate to say that, but it's the truth.
And I'm telling you, the leftist media is eating that kind of stuff up. When they hear those who are supporting Trump saying, yeah, we could use a dictator from time to time, kind of like a school marm or your parents. You will be punished for what you just did. What they have done is take that interview that he was doing with Sean Hannity, and he said, Sean is asking, he said, you'd like to be a dictator? He said, I would. I'd like to be for one day. You know what he means by that? He has stated it over and over again, and they cut away from when he had a chance to explain what he meant. They cut away when they were putting that little clip of pieces together because they want to prove that he wants to control you. Now, he said, day one, I will go in and rip up all of the pieces of legislation, executive orders signed by Biden, such as we'll get the Keystone Pipeline back, we'll start doing this, we'll start that, we'll shut the border, obviously, things of that nature. For one day, that's not really being a dictator. That's using the privilege of the office, as Joe Biden did when he went in. He began to sign executive orders left and right, killing the Keystone Pipeline, opening up the border, and everything else. But, of course, if it's our guy Biden doing it, that's not really being a dictator. That's just being Papa Uncle Joe doing what he does best for us. Rachel Maddow wanted to take that point and talk about the appealing possibility of a dictator. But when you listen to her, I'm wondering, is she talking about Trump or Biden?
What is appealing about a dictator? What is a dictatorship, right? What is appealing about a strongman leader replacing democracy? Having somebody who just stays in power indefinitely and has unchecked total authority to do whatever he wants. What is appealing about that? Not just why would you offer to be that? You can see the appeal to a person who wants to be that kind of person. But why would you want that in your country? The most appealing thing about a strongman leader, right, is that he'd be able to get stuff done. He'd be unconstrained, couldn't be stopped, you know. I alone can fix it. Through enforcing, you know, loyalty to him or death, by locking up his enemies, by breaking all the rules, you know, government schmoverment, Congress schmongress, the courts, yeah, right, them in what army? That's what he is promising. That's the appeal.
Well, now, right there, in those closing words she said, again, if you replay the Biden years and the January 6th inquiry and how everything's been going and labeling Catholics as possible terrorists and now wanting banks to submit records on anyone who bought maybe guns or Bibles and other actions they've taken and sending SWAT teams into the home of a man who said, I will surrender peacefully. I think it's wrong that you're charging me, but they show it in the middle of the night. And then, of course, going after Donald Trump repeatedly, SWAT teams into Mar-a-Lago as if they're going to raid and break down a cartel bastion. I want to hear Rachel Maddow go over those points again, and my question stands. Is she talking about Trump or Biden in the last 3 years?
He'd be unconstrained, couldn't be stopped, you know. I alone can fix it. Through enforcing, you know, loyalty to him or death, by locking up his enemies, by breaking all the rules, you know, government schmoverment, Congress schmongress, the courts, yeah, right, them in what army? That's what he is promising. That's the appeal.
Yeah, that sounds to me like Biden. Does it you? A lot of it does. Larry, you're just drinking the Kool-Aid. Yeah, I know. I'm going to hear that from you. But you remember, I don't drink Trump Kool-Aid untested. I test and question everything. E. Jean Carroll is the woman, of course, who won the $83 million in a civil suit against Trump based on defamation, based on her claim of a rape decades ago. We'll go into a little bit more detail in a moment, but I'm leading up to that because Rachel Maddow, after going all through this about a dictator and what kind of person we need leading our nation, suddenly praises E. Jean Carroll as a victor against a would-be dictator such as Donald Trump.
A would-be strongman says he is immune from the legal system. He is unconstrained by any institution and by anything in our government. E. Jean Carroll is the one who called that question. E. Jean Carroll's civil case says, I'm not a strong man, and neither are you. None of us are. No one can be in America, because this is a democracy, and the law, in a case like this, she says, the law protects me, even from you. And so I will call the question. I will call on the law, the court system, to show that, to prove that the strong man model does not work here, however much people might want it. This is not Europe between the wars. This is America.
Oh, my God, the way Rachel Maddow said, this is America, I'm almost one stand up and salute. She acts like she really cares about America. Now, the E. Jean Carroll story, again, keep in mind, this is an accusation she filed in a civil suit in 2022, accusing Trump of sexually assaulting her in a dressing room at a Manhattan department store in the mid-90s. And then because he defamed her, denying that he attacked her in 2019, she filed the suit on defamation. Now, take note of this. In 2022, New York passed a law giving adult sexual assault victims a one-time opportunity to file civil cases, even if the statute of limitations is long expired. So she filed that lawsuit, accusing Trump of rape and seeking damages. Just happened to be a little niche cut into the law, and I'm not so sure it wasn't put there precisely, specifically for her. But I will answer this for you. Trump is not above the law. Neither is Joe Biden. What about the allegations of Tara Reid? Now, keep in mind, the allegations by E. Jean Carroll, there's no video in the department store of Trump following her around, as she claimed. There's no video of him pushing her against a wall near a dressing room, or maybe in the dressing room. Probably wouldn't be a camera there. Pushing his hand into her, or maybe her penis. But the bottom line is, no witnesses whatsoever. That's not uncommon with a rape case. I can't stress that enough. You don't simply dismiss the woman's accusations because it's someone powerful she's accusing, and it's just a one-on-one encounter. DNA evidence obviously would be valuable. None existed, none was pulled. But when you're talking about not being above the law, let me remind you about Tara Reid. Tara Reid had stated that Joe Biden, as a senator, pinned her against a wall, kissing her. She said, it all happened at once. His hands were on me, under my clothes, down my skirt, then inside of it. He penetrated me with his fingers and whatever and kept kissing me. Joe Biden was never held accountable about that, never questioned about it. Nothing done. Nothing. You know, when the facts bite you in the arse, it hurts, doesn't it? As well it should when you try to deny them. We're going to have more on the E. Jean Carroll story coming up in the next hour on how she plans to spend the $80 million. That's assuming she doesn't lose it on appeals. And, yes, that's going to be part of the story. More actions again also on how the state media tries to control the conversation and make Joe Biden look great despite all the numbers saying otherwise, and how an ABC, quote, journalist covers for Governor Newsom and agrees with him that, yeah, things couldn't be better, could they? Ha! Second hour, don't miss it. And as always, I encourage you to remember our pledge. Our pledge, one nation under God.